is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Miss Det Eamon. Det Eamon, her book is Things We Couldn't Say. And it really is the story of her life in Holland under the Nazi regime, and, of course, a group that she was part of that were rescuing Jews. Miss Eamon, are you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
All right, fine. Well, thank you, and it's really a wonderful book. It's very inspiring, of course, the faith of the Christians who risked their lives to help the Jews during that terrible, terrible time in history. So, basically, of course, so much of your book is based upon the journals that you kept, and, of course, of the journals that your fiancé kept as well. So, why don't you just go ahead and tell us the story as best you can, because it's a wonderful and very inspiring story, and I think very, very apropos of what's going on in America today, because I see some of the same spiritual forces and wicked forces at work in America that you saw there in Holland under the Nazis. So you pick the story up.
You want me to start telling it?
I want you to go ahead and start telling the story. Yes, please.
Okay. Well, I was 18 when Germany became so very powerful, and we were very scared in the Netherlands because they were occupying whole Europe, Hitler did. He took Austria, he took Czechoslovakia, then he marched into Poland, which meant the Second World War, because England and France had made a pact that if he ever would enter there, the war would start and they would help. And so we were very scared because then Denmark and through Norway was taken, and Spain was already Nazi with Franco. So we and the France had really pulled out to England with the war, and so we were very scared. And then he marched in our country.
All right, fine. Of course, I was in what about May of 1940?
That was May 10, 1940.
All right. So the Germans came in. Of course, there was very little resistance to them. Dietz's fiance was in the Dutch army, but fortunately he survived. He was then released and went back to work. But of course, then as the Nazis were there, of course you could see that there was a growing animosity towards the Jews. And of course, the Germans were really very ruthless. There were a lot of things you couldn't say. You lived in constant fear that, of course, you could be arrested if you did anything to defy the Germans. Is that right?
Oh, it was terrible. They made all oaths, and we are kind of stubborn in the Netherlands, and we didn't like to be told. We weren't allowed. You got half a year prison for listening to the BBC in England. And for us, it was bad enough. It was curfew, and you couldn't do this, and you couldn't do that. But for the Jewish people, it was really terrible. And we had really the most Jews per, if you think we had 8 to 9 million inhabitants. And Poland had also, but the Poles were very anti-Semitic, and the Netherlands not, because in the time, and in Spain, in 14 or 1500, the Inquisition killed the Jews there. They did not go to Austria, to Germany, or everywhere. They came all to the Netherlands. So we had, I read 182,000 Jews. And then in Germany, you had that Kristallnacht that they attacked all the Jews. That was Anne Frank's family, too. And many, over a couple of thousand German Jews came to the Netherlands thinking that they would be safe there.
No, because they weren't. The German Jews weren't safe in the Netherlands once the Nazis had invaded because, of course, the Jews had been targeted for extermination.
Oh, he wanted, that was his plan. I had a paper later after the war, of a meeting, a secret meeting that they kept And like car dealers or car the car factories make projections what they are going to do. And so they had projected to kill over 11 million from every country, how many they would kill. And it was double the amount that they did actually. And then it became terrible for the Jews in the Netherlands. First they weren't allowed to, let's say, have contact with the non-Jews. And I worked with a Jewish guy in a bank, and he was sitting next to me in work, and he played beautiful violin, and my brother plays in orchestra cello, and I play horrible piano, but he wanted to play trio, so he came often to our house, and he was a friend, and he wasn't allowed to come anymore, because we were Christians, and the Jews were not allowed to come, and we were not allowed to go there, and then they started really, they all, you know, the people here don't know that, but they all got letters, and if you think, many of the families had been there since 1500, and they got letters home that they had to leave their house, and always during the curfew hours that the Dutch people were at home and couldn't see it, and in that letter it said they had to leave everything behind, their house and everything, and they were only allowed for each member in the family to take a little hand thing that they could carry with a change of clothing, a fork, a knife, a spoon, and a blanket. And that's so they had to leave their house and report all this near big railroad stations. Now, if you think, those people hadn't done any crime, and they were told to leave everything behind. And you know, at that time, we had a dog. I loved that dog. So those Jewish kids had cats and dogs, and the parents and the mother had me heirlooms and things, and they weren't allowed. And then they left, and they didn't even know where. And then I heard later after the war, there was a German paper that I saw, and it said that the Jews had begged to be allowed to leave the Netherlands because the Dutch people were so mean, and they offered all their possessions to the Germans. It was such a lie. Oh, terrible. Yeah, and then they started on the Jews, and we first didn't know what they would do. But then Herman called me, and he said...
Now, I think for our listeners, they have to understand that Herman was a Jewish man who... Well, a young Jewish man who worked in the bank along with Viet. And, of course, he was a Jewish. And, of course, he was a friend of their family. He played, one of the music instruments very beautifully. And, of course, eventually, of course, they had to find a place for him. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Diet Eamon, and we're talking about her book, Things We Couldn't Say. And, of course, you'll hear a lot of people today who tell you that there was no Holocaust, there was nothing terrible that happened to the Jews in Germany, that the Jews run our country. And all I can say is if the Jews are running our country, they're doing a terrible job because our country is doing everything they can to, of course, force the Jewish nation, Israel, to give up Gaza, to give up the West Bank, now to give up Judea and Samaria. And the Jews that don't want to go along with that are under terrible persecution. So, boy, the people who are running our country are really doing a terrible job, and we know they control all the banking, but do you really think that the Bank of America is controlled by Jews? I mean, do you really think that Goldman Sachs is controlled by Jews? It really isn't if you get into the background. So there is so much anti-Semitism in America today. I'm constantly being criticized because I won't condemn the Jews. Well, I condemn the evil forces and a few bad Jewish people, wicked Jewish people, but you have to understand what really happened during the Second World War, and Diet was there, and she actually witnessed this in Holland. And so the Jews were targeted in Holland, and after the Nazis came in, the Nazis would take over the homes of the various people there. If you had a nice home, the Germans would just come in, take over your home. You'd have a room or two, and they'd have all the rest of the house. And so people lived in constant fear. It was illegal. It would send you to prison if you were found listening to the British Broadcasting Company. In fact, people were ordered to turn in their radios. Why? Because they didn't want them to hear the truth. anymore than in many respects the people who control the mass media in America today want the American people to learn the truth about what happened in Germany or certainly what's going on in our country today. Well, anyway, Diet was telling us about Hermann. Hermann, of course, came under persecution. He was ordered to report for deportation. And so Diet had asked her her fiancé, Heine, who was, of course, at that time was in hiding and living on a farm, what Hermann should do. And, of course, that started this whole movement, resistance movement, where they took on the job of hiding Jews from the Germans so that the Jews would not be killed. And they would have been killed at that time. Most of the people who went off to the concentration camps died in the concentration camps. And we've got a great four-tape set on the real story of the Holocaust that you're not going to hear from the controlled media today, and the horror that these people went through. But yet you pick up the story. What happened then when Hermann was faced with a deportation and you and your fiancé decided to help him?
Then Hermann told us and showed a letter. He said, we have to do something because as Christians, you know, talking is simple, that's easy, but it comes to deeds. And Jesus said, do unto others what you want others to do unto you. And we said to each other, my fiancé and I, we said, we have to help. But we didn't know what to do. I was 20, and my fiancé was a year older. We had never been in circumstances you don't know what to do. And then we said, but we have to help. We can't do. You can't even look in the mirror. You would be ashamed of yourself if you don't do a thing. And then Hein got a great idea, because his father was out in the country, all farmers, a very Christian area, and his father was principal of the Christian grade school there. And Hein was the oldest of 10 kids, and he lived there years, and he said, Diet, I know all those farmers. They are all Christians. They sent their kids to my father's school. And if I hop on the train, because this was in the city of The Hague, and that other place was Nijkerk in the middle of the country, he said, if I hop on the plane and I ask any of those farmers to take Hermann till the end of the war, I know they'd do it. But we thought that the war would be maybe a year and a half, 2 years, you know, we were so young. And so we said, well, I phoned Hermann. I said, we have an idea. And I met him again. He didn't want that I came to his house, and he was too scared to come out, so we met at the street close to his house. And then I told him, I said, yes, please, and can you do my sister Rosa, and can you do my fiancé Ada, and her mother, and the father has already died. And within 2 weeks, we had a list over 60 people, Jewish people, who wanted all a place. And Hein hopped on the train, and the farmer said, sure, sure, send them, no problem. So there was nothing heroic. We just brought them there. And they could not go outside because in that time nobody traveled, and the farmers, all their family lived around, and nobody got ever mail. And then the Jewish people started writing each other. We had a father and mother on one farm and a son and on other and a daughter. We spread them out. But then the mailman was furious because those farmers had never any mail except maybe the newspaper and the church bulletin. So it was very tight. But anyway, we helped them as much as they could.
And because you gave them places there, and of course you had to get identification cards for them. Now, of course, there was a real question. As a Christian, should you oppose the government? And there's some people who say that, oh, you should never oppose the government. They preach this in our churches today, just as they preached it in the Nazi churches in Germany, Romans 13. Oh, you have to go along with the government. But what happens when the government has been taken over by evil? Should you compromise with evil? How did you actually really solve that problem for your own thoughts? How did you, in your own conscience, say, it's all right to oppose the government, to do things which are dishonest? In fact, at one point you talked about how there were groups that would go out and steal identification cards or steal ration cards for the Jews. And they would always get down on their knees first and pray to God for support, and then they'd go out and do something dishonest. How did you justify doing that?
Well, it was in our case in the Netherlands very simple, because our royal family, the first prince of Orange, was with the Reformation, and he sold castles, and he hired the Swiss who were mercenaries, and he helped the Dutch in the war against Spain that wanted to bring the Catholic faith by force to the Netherlands.
And what year was that? Was that in the 15 or 1600s?
But our queen is there since she is a descendant of that, and they have always been Christians from the Reformed Church, and officially she was crowned by they're always in that it's said by the grace of God, and our government we have ministers you know that surround her with their wisdom, the minute like you have here the State Department, and just the few days in the war. The Queen went to England with all the ministers, and people thought it was a flight. No, it was as the government, because all those ministers left their wives and children in the Netherlands. So they went as our government, and she spoke from England, and she gave us orders, and that's what we did. It was our legitimate government was in London.
And, of course, I think it's an important thing that, I mean, these were the Christians. And they said, yes, we will be subservient to the government, but our government is the Queen, Queen Wilhelmina. And, of course, she is living in Great Britain. And she would put in broadcast to the people in the Netherlands. Now, they weren't supposed to have radios. It was a serious offense. You could be sent to prison. Or, you know, if you were ever found to have a radio, and even worse, you were listening to the BBC. But here is Queen Wilhelmina broadcasting to her subjects. And so it's telling them to resist. And so they were simply doing what their government told them to do, and that was resist this evil government that was put in power over them. Now, of course, there were people on the other side, and you commented how many collaborators there were, and even good Christians who went right along with the evil Nazis because, well, that seemed to be the thing to do, or so many people were afraid to do anything. And you were just totally frustrated by these people who, you know, when the first night when your fiancé was in difficulty, nobody would take him in. Nobody wanted to take him in. Everybody had an excuse. They were all afraid, just like so many people in America are afraid to do things and take a stand against what's going on. But certainly, what percentage of the people were willing to take a stand against the Nazis, and what group just went right along with the evil? Because it was the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, because I remember really that first night when the Gestapo came to arrest him, and that nobody wanted to take him. And there was curfew at 11, and at 10 o'clock we found out that the Gestapo had been at his boarding house. So I had to find somebody. He was not from The Hague. He was from that where his father lived, at the Christian school. And I was so upset with all my wonderful Christian friends who all were scared. And there I made a vow that wherever I find somebody in misery and who needs help, I'll help. And that really influenced my life very much. And about obedience to the government, there was a small group of very serious Christians. It's called the Bond. And they only really they stare at their sins, and that's a kind of a small branch. And they said you have to obey the overhead, the authorities. So they didn't want to do, they considered it a sin. But we felt we had to. And then in the end, when the Germans were occupying whole Europe, there was in Germany, they had taken all the females also as an army. In Germany itself, there were very old and very young people, but no people to work in factories, no people to work the fields. And in all the occupied countries, there were big signs, come to here, good pay, wonderful work. But we didn't want to go. Who wants to help the enemy? So then they got mad, and they had no food at that time in Germany and in our country. Well, they took all the food from the occupied countries and brought it to Germany, and we didn't have any. And they still needed more people to work there. And then two things happened. We got ration cards, and it lasted a month, and they were so little, it wasn't even enough for normal eating 2 weeks. And especially the young kids, they didn't have enough, the teeners. And then they invited us to come and work, and when we didn't do it, it became forced labor. And a lot of people don't know that here in America, but all the males between 16 and 45 had to go to Germany, and they didn't want to. So all those guys went in hiding, and then the Jews went in hiding, And you had to have your ration cards. And people who took the Jews and the Dutch guys in, they said, yeah, but you only got your ration cards if you showed your identification.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Ben.
You go right ahead. You were just telling us, of course, that you had to have a ration card to go ahead and get food.
Yeah.
And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, they're talking about the possibility of, you know, having to ration food.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Years, but her mind is still clear. She remembers the things that happened. And of course, they were hiding the Jews, and they had a large, I mean, they had started out with 60 Jews that this small group was hiding, but they had to get identification cards for them. Isn't it interesting, of course, that we're passing all sorts of legislation all across America, so every American will have to have a federal identification card. It'll be their driver's license, all to be correlated, all to have a chip in them, all to be, of course, communicated with this central identification, the central computer area through that chip in your passport. Through that chip that's in your federal ID card, which, of course, what they want. But you have to understand, this is all in the name of fighting Osama bin Laden, who wants to take away our freedom. So we have to all have an ID card. And that's the way it was in Hitler's Germany. Everybody had to have an ID card. So how did you get ID cards for the various Jewish people?
Well, we got together and we prayed. And we said, Lord, we have to have it. And in the end, it became clear to us the only way to get so many as we needed by a robbery on the German offices. And that's what we did. And then the guys, but see, when they marched in, the Dutch people who had worked, it was mostly in the town halls. And the Dutch right away wanted to quit. They didn't want to work under the Germans. And they were not allowed to quit. And that came now very good for us. Because we had everywhere in this place, in the town hall was a friend, and in another place. And then we went to people we could trust and say, can you exactly make a drawing of the building and where the cards are kept and how many guards are there, that they knew the whole situation. And before, and that if you think about it, this was done more than 2.5 years every month, because they were monthly cards. And then we always went on our knees and prayed first and said, Lord, please, we have to do this. You know that. And will you see that nobody gets hurt, not of the other party and not of our group. And that you see, only once in all those months that we did it, more than 2.5 years, there was only one shooting and our guys were already outside because you had to have revolvers when you did that. And the girls were not searched, but all the men had to go. And you will say, how did our group then work? But the pastors and the priests didn't have to go. So then after the first robbery, all our guys were all of a sudden, they took themselves false papers, and they were all pastors. So I worked with a very religious group then. And so that is how it happened. And then we had to do that every month. And then we had a terrific falsifier. He was Jewish. And we stole all the stamps and everything inside, and even many more than we needed that we could help other groups to. And that went on for over 2.5 years.
And of course you actually modified many of the identification cards, and then you'd have to steal the ration cards. But you were able then to supply the ID for the Jews who were living on the farms, and then the ration cards for food. And, of course, so they were able to function and to actually protect the Jewish people on the farms. Now, were some of the Jewish people on the farms actually identified by the Gestapo, by the secret police, or certainly by the traitors among you? Because, of course, there were people in Holland who, you know, worked for the Nazis, and, of course, they were paid a fair sum of money if they would simply inform on their neighbors. Was this much of a problem for you?
Yes, you can.
In other words, the people, the Dutch people who actually helped the Nazis.
Very few, there were. But, you know, if you betrayed, for instance, a Jew or anybody in hiding, you got money. And you have always low life who does that. But over the whole, it was a very small percentage. But what happened then is many groups did it. Maybe you've heard of Corrie ten Boom?
Right, yes.
That she wrote that book, The Hiding Place, and the film that Billy Graham made. Now, she was in the same camp as I was later. But, I mean, that group did it, and many groups. And so the Germans realized that the Jews were not showing up in the amounts that it should be, and they got mad, and they... Everywhere in the papers and on the walls in the cities, everywhere was announcements, if you help a Jew, you will be treated as a Jew. So that meant you were sent to the camps. And on the robberies, there was the death penalty. And when you do a robbery, you have to have revolvers, and on having weapons was also the death penalty. So then it became very dangerous. But we had to do it and trust God.
And so basically what you're saying is that you were told if you helped a Jew, you'd be treated as a Jew, and this was could be a capital offense. In other words, they could execute you. Would that be right?
I can't hear you very well.
The fact that if you helped the Jews, why, you could be put in prison and perhaps sent off to die. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you help, if they caught you for helping a Jew...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I guess this evening is Deet Ekman, Eman, E-M-A-N. Her book is Things We Couldn't Say. And, of course, she's telling about, you know, this little group of Christians that had set out. They decided they were going to stay and help the Jews escape, and at least they'd get put them onto farms with the hope that they would be safe on the farms for, you know, for a year. They thought the war would be over in a year, but, of course, that was in August of 1942. The war didn't end until really the latter part of 1944, so the war was going to go on for several more years before it would come to an end. I guess the war didn't end until maybe, was it early 1945 or late 1942 when the war ended?
Well, you know, the farmers didn't really need the ration cards. They had it. But when in the end there were so many that we had to ask the people in the villages and in the cities, and they absolutely needed it, because in a normal family, let's say a father and mother and three kids, they had 5 ration cards. It was so little that in every family, and you can't imagine that here in America, that would happen. The kids would say, Mom, may I have one more potato, and Mama to say no. Mom can have one more slice of bread, and Mama to say no. So they definitely couldn't take another teenager in, let's say, 17, 18, 19 years old without a ration card. So that's why we had to do the robberies, when we had to hide them in the cities and the villages.
Well, of course, did you hide some of the Jews in the cities, and how did you get people to be willing to take them in?
Oh, you did. They were never allowed to go outside. That was a terrible thing, but they had to choose. I mean, you know, go to your death or be in a house. And at the farms at night when... But it was dangerous. If anybody saw it, you could be betrayed, and they chose to do that. I mean, there was no alternative.
And so it was really a matter of, you know, just staying inside all the time and staying and hiding all the time if you hoped to survive, and you were Jewish. And but then, of course, your fiancé wasn't Jewish. He was actually put on a list because he had was thinking about trying to escape. Was that true?
My fiancé was a Christian, and in the beginning he tried to get to England, because the Queen was there, our government was there, they were forming an army there, and we thought that there you could do something. But then that was a terrible, dangerous trip when he tried to do that, and he escaped death by a hair.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest this evening. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Deet Ekman, and we're talking about her book, Things We Couldn't Say. And it's her story of what it was like in living in Holland under the Nazi occupation. And, of course, there were really some of the people, many of the people in Holland were just afraid to stand up against the Germans. And some of them were informers for the other side, and they had their informers there, just as we have informers in the United States today. I know, because at one time many years ago I was approached to actually become an informant for the government, just spying on the people in Santa Cruz where I lived, and I did not accept the assignment, fortunately, but I know that there are others who have. And we know many of our Christian ministries have been, or certainly conservative ministries, have been infiltrated, whether it be Pat Matriciana, who is a good friend, who put out a video called The Clinton Chronicles, or and it turned out, of course, a couple of his best friends, he thought they were his best friends, he was even helping them financially. There were really FBI informants there to destroy him. The same thing happened to Michael Rupert's ministry. The same thing happened to Media Bypass magazine. And many of the major ministries and conservative organizations in America have been infiltrated with informants who, of course, are reporting what's going on. And many of these organizations, like Chuck Carter's organization, very, very prominent, a dozen years ago, have been infiltrated and destroyed. Ladies and gentlemen, this happens. I know they've tried to infiltrate our organization. It's the same techniques that are always used by those who would control. Well, anyway, of course, we're talking about now what happened in Hitler's Germany. So pick up the story there, and certainly your fiancé was wanted to escape to England. But actually, the people who were trying to get him to go to England were actually traitors. They were just trying to get him to give names of other people who opposed the German occupation. Is that right?
Well, lots of people in the beginning tried to go to England, later not so many anymore because there was much more to do in the Netherlands. And it was really, in the end, so many people were involved and the Gestapo was really busy in arresting people left and right. It was terrible. And you couldn't trust a person because the Gestapo officially, that were the real meanies, and they were officially should wear a black uniform, but they didn't, and they were females and males from all ages. And I mean, there could be a young girl in the store, and if you would say something to her, she could be Gestapo. So you didn't trust a person anymore if you didn't really know him, and it was a horrible atmosphere. It was terrible.
And even if you did know them, you never knew whether, of course, they still might be a traitor, an informant for the Nazis.
Well, like my friends, we went to the same church, and if you knew people for years, that was our group. We knew each other for many years, and we knew that we all hated what was happening to our country. And when it's such an evil government, you do a great sin when you obey those orders.
All right, fine. Well, then, how did you get into trouble? How did they finally end up arresting your fiancé, Heine?
And me, too.
And
well,
you, too.
Yeah, well, we were betrayed. There was a lady who had 27 Jews in a small apartment, and she belonged to another group, and she was buying ration cards. And my fiancé had met the man who had brought them there, and he says to me, did go there. He says, but it's very dangerous. They won't let you in. I had to have a password. And so I came in that house, a small apartment, one bedroom, one living room, a little bathroom, a kitchenette, and she had 27 Jews. And she was a golden heart, but she did not use her brains. And so I got terrible scared, and I said to her, I'll take many away, I'll find still places, although it got more and more difficult. I said, but you can keep two, but you can, this is a giveaway, they will be arrested. And I had taken I was there for months, 4 or 5 times a week, and I took the weekends, I found places, and I took 20 Jews away, so I started breathing a bit lighter. And then the next time I came, she had taken 8 new ones in, and then she had again 24, and then they were arrested because the neighbors could have been Nazis. I asked her, do you know your neighbors? No, she didn't know. And they did, she couldn't say no, but she brought the whole crowd, and then they were all arrested. And later I heard all those Jews, 24 of us, straight brought to Sobibor and gas, and she was taken prisoner. But what she had done was unforgivable in the war. She had kept a diary, and in the diary I'd given her a false name. Those came and bought 27 ration cards. Those came, bought 27 IDs for the Jews. Those came, took 2 Jews away. So when the Gestapo found the diary, it was clear that I was involved, and Hein came, there was our leader, he came now and then. I was there every day practically in The Hague, but he traveled over the whole country. And it was a giveaway that we were involved in the robberies. And the Gestapo never gave up to try to find us. And it would have been the death penalty for Heine. And I lived under false names. I always felt like David fleeing before Saul, a night here, a night there. And I can only say it was such a dangerous time. And then after a year, first they arrested Tyne. And we had just taken out our wedding license. I had my wedding dress at home. And then a week later, Hines smuggled a note out of prison. He took a big risk, but it arrived at our other leader. We had two leaders. And he said, Diet, you have to take again another name. They know your false name now. And you may, under no circumstance, come in the province of Friesland. They're everywhere looking for you. And warn all the guys and bring all the documents, because when we had stolen those big bunches, we didn't keep that on. We had a P.O. box, and that's where it was. And we had to, I had to empty the P.O. box. My brother did that for me. And then I had to bring it to The Hague. And on the Hein was already arrested then. And I was arrested on the trip with all those dangerous papers. My sure death sentence in my blouse in an envelope. And then I prayed to God like I've never prayed before. I was sitting on a railroad station that the Gestapo was surrounding me. The top guy, the lieutenant, was standing in front of me, and the other five were facing me in the shape of a horseshoe. And I had that envelope, and I'd opened my blouse, and it was on a railroad station in Rotterdam, a very busy station. And there was no fuel, so there were only few trains. There were hundreds and hundreds of people. It was rainy and cold. They were walking up and down. And I prayed that God would give a moment, 30 seconds, that I could throw that envelope between the crowds. But I could not take the chance that the Germans would see it, because, of course, that was... And it's all in the book, as God did it, because that German had, for the first plastic raincoat, a military coat, and it had big pockets, and I'm fluent in German, and I pretended that I couldn't understand and say a word, but I heard that one of those lower soldiers said, is that new stuff? And it was in plastic, and he said, what nice, and you have such big pockets. And then this guy, the lieutenant, said, you know what, this coat has inside pockets. That had till that time never happened. And the other said, inside? And he was over 6 feet, and he opened that coat totally from top to bottom and held it out wide, and all the five heads looked in that coat, and there went my envelope. And that gave me such a feeling of trust in God. I said, oh, thank you, Lord. It may still cost my life, but it's not that your arm is too short. And from that moment on, I blindly trust God. I've faced death twice. But he is always there, and the last words of Jesus also were, no, I am with you always.
And, of course, you were able then to get rid of this envelope that had the names of all the people that were in your secret group.
I didn't get that.
The envelope that you were talking about, the envelope that was in your blouse, were you able
There was an order for two pilots, if you helped shut down pilots, that they were shot on the spot, and we had done that too. But that they did not know from the diary. But they knew from other things. And we had orders for two, and the pictures of those pilots, they were shot down. And there was a lot of money, because people who were scared of... People were scared. Everybody was scared. They said, our elderly people, they said, we can't help, and or we can't help. We had money, gave money, because in the end, we put them always Christian people. And from all the Jews, there were over 100 only one turned to be Christian, and it were most people who every day read the Bible where they stayed after the hot meal. So it's really very difficult that Jewish people accept Jesus. But when did? And we trusted the people, and they did only want not even full coverage. The food was terrible expensive. So when the Jewish people didn't have any more money, we collected money from friends to help.
All right, fine. And so, but basically, of course, you were arrested then by the Germans. And did you take you to trial, or did they just send you to a concentration camp?
I was first brought to a maximum security prison, the prison where here also Milosevic was. And now there is that other guy that they looked for 13 years from Yugoslavia, one of those other criminals, the murderers. And I was put there, and it was a small cell, three, we have meters, 3 meters long and 2.5 meters wide. and then Little Cup, and I was number 5. It was so packed. And there was straw on the floor. We slept on straw mattress. An old Jewish lady had that man caught. And then I had to go bathroom. And I didn't see a toilet anywhere. And I said, where do we go? And then they pointed at a metal drum the size of a bucket in the corner. And that's where you had to go. And in the morning we got, they yelled in the corridor. And then we got, like kids have on the beach, a little pail with cold water, but no towel, no soap, no shampoo, no nothing.
And because this was your crime, was of course you tried to protect the Jews from being arrested and set off to Germany to be gassed. Well, then of course you ended up in a concentration camp with Corrie Ten Bloom.
Where
was
that? When the invasion came, this whole prison was on the coast. And they were afraid there would be a second invasion apart from in Normandy, because there were, it turned out, 1,800, there were many more prisoners, criminals, but there were 1,800 resistance people. And they were all loaded in trains, and we didn't know where we were going. And then we were put in the south on the border of Belgium. There's a concentration camp, Fught. And that's where we were put in barracks with about 175 or 200 women, and the men also, they were in another part of the camp.
All right, fine. Well, were you there until the end of the war, or how did you get out? Because I know that in Corrie Ten Bloom's book, she described the fact that, you know, she was sort of accidentally released because she was scheduled to be killed along with her sister and all the other, many of the other women who were with her.
No, I did so super stupid. I have studied 7 languages, but I did so super stupid that I couldn't speak any German. And you had to stand very straight, and I always stood with my shoulders bent. And I did very, if they sell something, I said, can you say it in Dutch? I don't know what you're saying. So in the end, after months, they thought that I had a very low IQ. And then General Patton, that we didn't know who it was approaching our camp. And so we knew that we would be liberated. We heard the heavy artillery come closer. And then the Nazis got very, very nervous. And our barrack was on the edge of the camp. And there was a river. And they said there was electricity. And there was a minefield. And then, of course, the barbed wire and the fence with the towers with machine guns. So you couldn't escape. But behind that were woods. And every sunset we heard machine guns go. And then there was a spy in our midst, but I knew who it was, because we were scared stiff of our hearings. That was life or death. That were not judges. That were people, Nazis. And if they had a bad mood, then everybody could be sentenced to death. There was no rule or anything. You were totally you were depending on their mood. And it was the nervous thing. But there was one girl, so when we had to go for a hearing, we were scared stiff. And this girl was never nervous, and she was called out several times a week and was away for hours. And this camp is in a beautiful vacation area with lakes. And when this girl came back, her name was Honey, then she came back, she had sent them. So that told me that she was the spy and the place there to spy on us. So anyway, I used her, because then all of a sudden when I was on my false papers, a maid. And when I left home, I had never even boiled a potato, but I learned it at all the farms where I was hiding. And so they made me in charge of all the underwear of the German guards on the corners. And it was so much that I got 2 other girls to help me. But then when Patton, later turned out to be Patton, when he came close and we heard that machine guns, they were executing a lot of our Dutch young men, mostly who had helped allies. And then they didn't tell that, but then they let the widows out because they didn't have trains enough to bring the whole camp to Germany. So, and I was wondering, all of a sudden I got all bloody clothes to wait and to wash. And I went to this girl, she was with a bunch of others, and I did again, very stupid. And I said, you know, I do the laundry, but now there is bloody clothes, and what would that be? And she was not a good spy. She should have said, oh, I don't, nobody knew it. But she said, oh, that the Dutch guys who are being executed, then you hear the machine guns. So then I knew that. And that's when I knew the character, because I thought, oh, God, what if I get the clothes of Hein, of Up, of any of my friends? I had 8 in prison, and none of them came back.
None of them were, all the others were killed?
They were all killed in different camps.
And, of course, but you were actually... did the Allies come and certainly liberate your camp? How were you able to get out of the camp?
No, because I think that's the only conclusion I can make. They went barrack by barrack. They had so few trains because our queen had spoken a few months ago. And then the Allies were so powerful. And they had Spitfires in England. And that were small planes. And they cruised from the coast from the North Sea to Germany, up and down over all our highways. And if they, and the Queen had said, don't take any train and truck, and she had told that all the personnel of the railroads had to go in hiding and strike. So it's only Germans, and whatever moved, then you heard the Spitfires, and they made a noise, they said, and then they came down, and then you heard, and then you saw flames, and there were so many trains and trucks burnt out along the roads. So, and they didn't have trains enough for this whole camp, is thousands. And they let all the widows out. And I think that they went barrack by barrack. And that, oh, she's a widow, she can go, she can go, she can go. And that's when they came to me and they, oh, she's so stupid.
Hold that thought, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, I guess it's... Did Eamon, and we're talking about, of course, her survival in the concentration camps, I suppose that you actually were very poorly fed.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt, that nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-
Wonderful Christian testimony, and of course the book will be available, and if you can wait a little while to call our exchange or order it in the morning, Things We Couldn't Say will be available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and we'll probably offer it along with a CD, of course, our interview this evening. We think it's important you understand the similarity between what was happening in Holland under Nazi occupation, what's going on in America today. The same thrust of, oh, everybody's got to have an identification card. We've got to track everybody because, after all, the wicked Osama bin Laden wants to take away our freedom. And, of course, Christians were told we have to go along with the government. Well, I think that our government is the Constitution. That's the government that the God has given us, and we should be adhering to the Constitution. That is the source of our freedom, the free society we were given. And, of course, we have people at the highest levels of our government, whether it be John McCain or Barack Obama. Neither one of them believe in the Constitution. Certainly McCain-Feingold bill was a totally unconstitutional bill. President Bush, when he signed the bill, said, I know it's unconstitutional, but I'm going to sign it anyway because the Supreme Court will take care of it. And, of course, the Supreme Court didn't, because the people in the Supreme Court don't believe in the Constitution either. And certainly Barack Obama, the most radical leftist, certainly senator, far to the left of Ted Kennedy or any of the others, of Hillary Clinton. Neither one of our candidates, presidential candidates, believes in the Constitution, but I hope you do, because I believe it was inspired in large part by men who believed in God. Well, if you'd like, of course, to get this wonderful book, and you see the similarities between what happened in Holland under Nazi occupation and the fear that we're seeing in America today, and how many people say, oh, I don't want to hear about what's going on. It just makes me feel bad. Or please, you know, we've got to support our government. You can't be anti-government. Our government is anti-American. It has violated the Constitution. Certainly most of everything that's going on in Washington, D.C. violates the very essence of our Constitution. We have another four-tape set. It's called The Holocaust and What Really Happened. The Holocaust, What's Really Happened. And you need to hear that and hear the testimony of other people who lived through the same terrible time as you hear all these people who tell us there was no Holocaust, no Jews were gassed. I don't know whether it was 6 million, could have been 8 million, could have been 4 million. The important thing is there was an organized program of anti-Semitism today, at that time, and there is an organized program of anti-Semitism today. Why? Because there are Luciferian forces at work within our society. There are people who have adopted the Gnostic faith, and you can look it up on the internet or an encyclopedia and learn that the Gnostics worship Lucifer. That was the common denominator behind Hitler's movement. Hitler's movement was founded in the occult. And the movement that controls America today, I call it the Brotherhood of Darkness, is founded in the occult as well. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or watch the DVD, and you can watch it free of charge up on our website at RadioLiberty.com under videos. Just that's the Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to hear our talk on the Forbidden Secret and get the syllabus that goes with it. You need to get our talk on the planned police state and the syllabus goes with that, because, of course, we have material in there that comes from the Luciferians, from the Lucius Trust. TheLuciusTrust.org. You can read their material up on the internet. They will tell you that they are deeply involved in spirituality and they worship a God, but it's not the God of the Bible. And when you understand that they believe that there really are spiritual beings that have evolved from down through the ages, who of course are the ones who are really ruling the world, they call them the spiritual hierarchy, the occult hierarchy. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle. as they were in Hitler's Germany. But we have the advantage. We know what's going on today. And, of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to Falls overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Barry Shamish, who is, of course, is an Israeli patriot. Has been writing in Israel for about 30 years about the corruption there, about, of course, the assassination of Israeli leaders who didn't want to go along with the agenda, of course, and because of actually threats against Barry's life, he was forced to come to the United States. So Israel's loss is our gain, but certainly his articles are printed on the Internet and read all over Israel, in fact, read all over the world. And, of course, Barry's just back from a speaking engagement, or maybe he's still on the speaking engagement. Barry, how are you tonight?
I'm fine.
Now, are you still on the speaking engagement, or are you on the way home?
No, I'm still on tour. I have my last speech tomorrow. I do 5 speeches in Nebraska. The weather is killing me. And they've gone very well. I've given 4 separate speeches. Today I did Shabtai Tzvili, Zionism of the Holocaust, to a very stunned audience. Saturday I did the Vatican. I did the Return of the Giants, and I did Rabin so far.
Well, I tell you what, because I think they're all fascinating. One of these days, I'd really like to put together a 4-tape set on the Return of the Giants. I think that is such an important subject, because it fits into so much of the things we talk about. But anyway, what are the issues that you think we should be talking about tonight as far as Israel is concerned?
Well, tonight, we're going to have a slightly different show just because I haven't properly examined Israel. I've been very busy, but I'm going to talk about later on. I'm going to talk about my impressions and my audience impressions of lots of things. But I'm going to bring up some issues that I got from Israel that are outstanding in their own way. I was on American Freedom Network this morning. Literally last second while I was driving in a car, I pulled over into a small town and sat on a bench and talked to Don Wiedemann, but I also listened to Israeli news, and there were remarkable issues. I mean, remarkable. Did you know that Pope Benedict the 16th canonized Pope Pius of the Holocaust yesterday? made him a saint?
No, really didn't.
Oh, well, here's a piece of news that shocked me, but not really. I mean, we're talking about Pope Benedict, who first served in Hitler Youth and then volunteered for the Wehrmacht. Now, to canonize means that really you should do a couple of miracles, do something worthy of it. But this German Pope canonized, well, I won't even talk about the Holocaust. The reason you don't canonize him is in the days following the Holocaust, the Vatican opened its rat lines and saved Nazis, well, at least 200,000 Nazis, and pretty well all the big guns except for the ones tried at Nuremberg. But, Martin Bormann and Mengele and Eichmann, they all went through...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Barry is talking about, of course, the rat lines. Now, most people in America have never heard of Operation Paperclip, by which several thousand Nazi scientists were brought to the United States, and people will tell you they came over here to help with the rocket program, von Braun and the others, because we had to compete with the Russians. People don't understand we financed the Russians from the very inception of Russia. We financed them all during the Second World War, and supposedly at the end of the Second World War, while we began to clamp down on them. We have financed Russia in one and the communist effort since their inception, and increased right up until the very present. If you haven't seen our little pamphlet on the Communist-Capitalist Alliance, you need to get it. You need to read it. You need, of course, to get the video we have called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. But, of course, during the Second World War, the United States and certainly many of our corporations were actually aiding Adolf Hitler. Exxon, Chevron, Oil was, or Esso, I think at that time, was actually aiding Adolf Hitler. And at the end of the Second World War, why, of course, we brought many of the Nazi scientists to the United States. And, of course, they would be von Braun. But there were also scientists who were not in the rocket industry. They were actually doing mind control experiments. And many of the mind control experiments were continued in America. And MKUltra came out of the Nazi experiments, as did many of the genetic warfare. And, of course, this effort to create new and terrible diseases come out of the Nazis. But then, of course, there was another group. And this was many thousands of Nazis, including Martin Bormann, as Barry has said, Adolf Eichmann, certainly Klaus Barbie, Martin Bormann. They were all helped to get to South America by the CIA, by certainly the MI6, and by the Vatican. Most people have never heard that. And people say, well, how could that possibly have happened? It's simply because there were occult influences working within our society. The same influences that had created Nazism helped at least 10,000 of the Nazis to escape to South America. Maybe there were more. How many do you actually think got down there, Barry?
I estimated 200,000. Most went to South America, but there were plenty who went to Canada and Australia that I know about. And, well, Saint Pius, that's his name now. He's now a saint. Certainly knew and certainly coordinated the escape of the Nazis. And, as I said, the Nazi Pope, Benedictine, made him a saint. Now, this got tremendous protests in Israel from all quarters. I heard a report from Yad Vashem, the official Holocaust Museum. Whoops.
Hold that thought, Barry. We're right. Going to be back in just a moment here. And, of course, Barry was just saying that the Pope Benedict had actually declared Pope Pius a saint. And, of course, this was the Pope who was in charge of the Vatican at the time that the CIA, MI6 and the Vatican were helping the Nazi war criminals escape to South America. For those people who would like more information, I'd suggest you go up on the Internet and type in Ratline. Just Google in Ratline, R-A-T line, and of course the CIA, MI6, and the Vatican. Most people and most good Catholics have no idea that there is an element within the Vatican, as there is within our CIA, as there is within the upper echelons of our government, that actually helped the Nazi war criminals escape prosecution in Germany. Oh, of course, we tried and executed a few of them, but that was just to make the American people believe that the people who were running things were really anti-Nazi. And of course, but if you get into the background of the book we carry called Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, if you'd like to see my interview, pardon me, my letter that I found in Colonel House's papers from the American ambassador to Germany in 1936, Ambassador Dodd, writing to Colonel House and saying, why are the 100 American corporations in Germany today building up the German military? Nobody wants a war. Why are they building up the German military? And, of course, we have no answer. Of course, I'm sure Colonel House knew why. Because, of course, Colonel House was part of this whole super government, this spiritual government working behind the scenes that actually is really directing the course of history. So basically, we know that there were people within our government that were helping Adolf Hitler, not only before the war, but during the war. If you haven't read the book, Trading with the Enemy by Charles Hingham, going into how while our boys were fighting and dying on the beaches of Normandy, American corporations, General Motors and Ford, were building the trucks that were taking the German soldiers onto the beaches of Normandy to kill the American soldiers who were invading. But we can never let the American people know that, can we, Barry? Go right ahead.
Well, we're trying to. I made something of a point how much Israel objected to this latest canonization, but of great note, President Shimon Peres, who I don't know how many times I've said is nothing but a spy for the Vatican, gave a statement that yes, he objects to Pope Pius becoming Saint Pius, but we shouldn't endanger the good relations we have with the Vatican over this issue. That was his statement. And in fact, he invited the Pope to Israel. Just to top the insult off, he invited the Pope to Israel. We're going to have a Nazi Pope coming to Israel if Paris gets his way. Now, that was the first item on the news that I heard today. Now, the next item, which I've already told you about, and you heard it here first, Tzipi Livni, as she's known, who is now the leader of the Kadima Party, failed to put together a coalition government. Remember, you asked me what my reaction to Olmert's resignation was, and I said, I'm telling you, he's going to stay in power till January, and he'll leave the next government with accords and agreements that are intolerable. Well, Livni failed to put together a government, and Shimon Peres, the president of Israel, gave her 90 more days to put together a government. That means 90 more days, 3 months of Olmert. Precisely as I said it would happen. Precisely. Now, one of the reasons she's having trouble putting together government is she was justice minister during the expulsion from Gush Katif. And as justice minister, she enacted legislation that essentially, short of the death, she set up concentration camps for anyone who would fight to save their homes. And she enacted legislation against the parents of teenagers fighting to prevent the expulsion as aiding and abetting sedition. She, in effect, put together the legal basis of turning Israel into a fascistic banana republic. And she made a lot of enemies. And trying to get that information in America, that Livni has a lot of enemies. And so far, she can't get enough Jews to support her her government, her proposed government, to put together a government, whereas Olmert stays in power for up to 90 days. Now, just so you know, what Olmert said this week, also on the news, I'm not getting a lot of information. As I said, I don't know, call it fate if you'd like, but just as I was driving to my speech, I got a call from Don at American Freedom Network, and I heard news from Israel for 5 minutes, and here Olmert this week has promised, before he leaves government, he will, no, I use the word saddle, he did not use the word saddle, he will lead Israel with final agreements on the division of Jerusalem, the, well, the 98% of the land of Judea and Samaria going to the PLO state, and he's going to come up with some sort of declaration of principles with the Syrians on abandoning the Golan Heights. He has all the way now till January to do all this. Now, remember, January is the month that Bush leaves the government of the U.S., Abbas leaves the government of the Palestinians, and Olmert leaves the government of Israel. And by then, the next government is going to be overwhelmed with the agreements that he is going to sign, even though he was forced out of power on severe corruption charges. He still can do this, and Bush, Rice are pushing him to sign away the country, and Olmert promised that he will do just that.
You're talking about, of course, a sign away of Rice to the Golan Heights.
Golan Heights, right. Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, all the high ground that protected Israel for years, returned to the 1949 borders. All of this he has promised to do before he leaves power,
but because,
and while Livni fails to put together a government.
Well, of course,
the only government Livni can put together is a government essentially of Arabs. That would be the Labor Party. 40% of their votes come from the Arabs. That would be the Arab parties themselves. And the one religious party, the incredibly corrupt Shas party, would put together a government that essentially hates Jews, but will, in fact, give Livni a government with a very serious minority of Jews within her government. That's her only possibility, and even that looks very, very unlikely. Olmert will stay in power, as I said, all the way till January, and he will leave Israel in a real pickle.
Well, of course, Olmert has always been a traitor, but the difficulty is the Israeli people realize, of course, they don't like Olmert, they don't like what he's doing, they don't like what their leadership is doing, but they don't know what to do because they don't quite understand why it is that it doesn't matter which party's in power in Israel. The same foreign and domestic policies are continued. But it's in this similar manner, the average American doesn't understand that it doesn't matter whether we elect the Democrats or the Republicans. The same foreign and domestic policies always are the same. And certainly neither Barack Obama or John McCain will speak out against globalism. neither Barack Obama or John McCain will come out and say we should have English as the official language of America. Neither Barack Obama or John McCain would say we ought to have terrorists in America to protect our industries. We ought to change our laws so we don't reward our corporations for moving their manufacturing facilities overseas. Why? Because both Barack Obama and certainly John McCain are globalists. And this similar thing is happening over in Israel. All the major political parties are controlled by exactly the same people. They have different names, but the policies always remain the same, and that is betrayal of the state of Israel. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, I have no problem agreeing with that. Sure. Very shortly, I'm going to talk about my lecture week, where a lot of people, I pointed out just what you said, and a lot of people agree that as responsible citizens, they will not vote in the upcoming presidential election. They can't, in all consciousness, support either party, and they're just going to back out of the election altogether until, I don't know, the revolution, whatever happens. But they're not going to vote in this election.
Well, I think a lot of people know something seriously wrong. They just can't connect the dots. And that's your job and my job. Of course, I think many of our Catholic listeners would be disagree with you as far as the Pope. But that's neither here nor there. I think most Americans know that there are serious problems in our society. But they do not understand the occult forces are working behind all political parties and religions. Well, Barry, go right ahead.
Oh, don't underestimate Catholics.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt, that nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
That is already ruling things going on behind the scenes today. We've always been partners with the Russians. We can't let the American people know that because, after all, if they realize how closely we've always worked with the Russians, and now, of course, with the Chinese communists, then how could we justify having the largest military in the world, 40,000 or 50,000 troops stationed in Germany 60 years after the war ended, 50,000 or 60,000 troops stationed in Japan 60 years after the war ended, certainly 30,000 or 40,000 troops stationed in South Korea 50 years after the war ended there. How could we justify having troops in 130 nations if Russia really wasn't a threat? And yet we're working in the quartet right alongside the Russia, laying out the solution for the Middle East program. So you pick up the story there. What did this lady tell you?
Oh, this lady is a Catholic. This lady from Canada is quite Protestant.
Okay, fine. Well, we won't hold that against her since I'm Protestant. Go ahead.
I mean, she just has a belief that Juan Carlos, it's more than a belief. I mean, she proves everything she says. I've known her for years, and she's a superb source. All she said is that, you know, Israel is now backing the Saudi plan. The Saudi plan, by the way, is Oslo. It doesn't matter what the names are. The original names of the current Saudi plan, backed by the quartet, were the Barcelona and Madrid agreements. It was originally the Barcelona plan. And she, you know, she taught me this, that everything happening in the Middle East goes through Spain and King Juan Carlos first. And again, this is not guesswork. I have a book called Save Israel, where I prove, well, thanks to her, I mean, without her, I would never prove this, that, in fact, the diplomacy of the Middle East has to go through Juan Carlos and Spain first. Now, Juan Carlos has a very interesting moniker. I would mock this, but if they don't in the Vatican, he is the protector of the holy places of Jerusalem. This is a title that goes back to the Crusades, and he is currently in charge of Jerusalem for the Vatican. And as I said in my lecture, the Vatican don't want Rome as their capital. That's a temporary dwelling. They want Jerusalem. Jerusalem is why there were crusades. It was to get the infidels out of Jerusalem and to reestablish the church in Jerusalem, run again by the Vatican. That hasn't changed. That is actual policy. And Spain is being used as the diplomatic headquarters for the whole Middle East peace process. Excuse me, we use the word peace with a tongue in the cheek. The Arab world is meeting in Spain under the tutelage of King Juan Carlos, once again, to bring peace in the Middle East. In other words, Israel out, Vatican in Jerusalem, Arabs get Israel back. All of this is being discussed right now. And she phoned me up, and she said, you know, that Ehud Barak signed the original Madrid Quartet.
And I think for our listeners, they have to understand that Barak is the current Minister of Defense there in Israel today. He's been in key positions before. They play musical chairs. Barak now is in charge of the military. But Barak, of course, was instrumental in signing many of the giveaways for Israel long ago. It doesn't matter which party you have. You have a small little clique that runs things. And just as it doesn't really matter here in the United States, the same people are always in control. Henry Kissinger, who's he advising? Why, he's advising Sarah Palin. He's advising George Bush. And who's advising Barack Obama? Why, it's Zinu Brzezinski. They're both employed by the Rockefellers, one a Democrat, the other a Republican. It's all showbiz, ladies and gentlemen. Understand that. The same thing happens over in Israel. You have the same cast of characters, you know, decade after decade after decade, whether it's Perez or Olmert or Barak, they're all there. But the loyalty is not to Israel, but to, I believe they worship a different God, certainly not the God of the Bible, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest, of course, is Barry Shamish, who's an Israeli patriot who looks at what's going on through, is certainly the focus of somebody who's concerned about the betrayal of the Jewish people by their leaders, just as I believe the American people should be concerned about the betrayal of our nation by our leaders. Of course, it's our leaders who are actually funding the Palestinian liberation movement. Of course, we're actually training soldiers for the Palestinian terrorists. You can look it up on the internet. You know, U.S. funds training Palestinian soldiers. We're also funding Egypt in preparation for the coming war. We're supplying weapons to Saudi Arabia in preparation for the coming war against Israel, and none of this really makes sense. But you go right ahead, Barry. There has to be some explanation for what's going on. So you go ahead, pick up this story.
Well, now let's discuss my week and the people I've been speaking with and the discussions I've had. I've had nice audiences. These are messianics, and I like their movement. What they are Christians who are returning to their Jewish roots. They're learning Hebrew prayers. They're learning the Kabbalah. They just believe that Christianity owes its roots to Judaism. And, you know, I'm all in favor of this. So long as they respect that I'm a Jew, and I'm going to stay a Jew, and I don't want to be messianic, which they do, by the way. My experience has been very good with them. They do that.
Well, aren't some of them, aren't some of them, though, who are Jewish, who become Christians, as well as Christians who, of course, are looking for the messianic roots of the faith? Aren't some of them actually Jews who become Christians?
Well, many Jews have been... Well, mostly coerced through the Inquisitions of the Vatican, have become Christians. But they, you know, within a generation, they're gone. Their Jewishness is forgotten. To stay Jewish, you have to be Jewish. You become Christian. That's it. A generation later, you're gone. You're not part of the Jewish world anymore. And nonetheless, these people are very, very fine people, and we think alike, and I enjoy their company a lot. Now, we had discussions where I hope I left a good impression.
Hold that thought, Barry. We're going to bring our stations back on board, and then we'll carry on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Barry is simply talking about his experiences this last week talking to Messianic congregations. But before we go on, Barry, I want you to tell our listeners how they get your books, how they can get your DVDs, and how they can get your website, because there's all sorts of fascinating information there. In fact, I was just, you know, looking for information on the Yemeni children, the children that, of course, were used for experimental purposes by our government. These were Jewish children, and then the section on the Sephardic children, the ringworm children, and Chris, it's all up on the internet. If you simply Google in the Shamish and the ringworm children or the Yemeni children, fascinating material there. So pick up the story. You know, how can people get to your website and get your information and get your books and your DVDs?
Well, you just go to lulu.com for the books, www.lulu.com. There's a little box that says search right in my name, Chamish. That's Chamish, Chamish in Hebrew. And then my website is barrychamish.com. And I won't be home for a few days, but when I get home and you're interested in my DVDs, which these audiences really enjoyed them, I have a new DVD, Shabbat Tzvi, Labor Zionists in the Holocaust, as well as a new DVD on the Vatican. And just give me, both recorded last month in Atlanta. My number is 904-315-8079. That's 904-315-8079. Let me get home to Florida before you phone me. I still have two more days of work in Nebraska. And let's talk about some interesting moments in my little tour. Now, I was talking this afternoon with a couple people, and the subject of mammoths came up. The interesting thing about the mammoths in Siberia is, well, the first mammoths that were found in 1908 had food in their mouths. They were frozen solid while eating grass. And their meat was fresh enough to feed to the sled dogs. And they keep being found. Every summer, an expedition goes to chop through the permafrost. I mean, they've been frozen solid for 10,000 years with food in their mouth, which means whatever caused them to die must have been instantaneous. And it's a major mystery that really is not well understood, how a beast as big as a mammoth could die while chewing grass. And I've always been interested in this mystery. Now, the answer had to have been something dramatic, like an axis shift. In other words, Siberia was in a temperate place, and an animal as big as a mammoth had to have a lot of food, so we assume it was not the Siberia of today. And an axis shift would push Siberia suddenly, immediately, into the Arctic, where they exist today. That's one explanation. But when I mentioned the word 10,000 years, the lady and her daughter and another friend, they got very agitated and said that's not possible because the Earth has only been around some 5,800 years. And, I mean, this always shocks me that educated people would believe that 5,800 years ago the mammoths were in Siberia, and that's the explanation. And I want to bring up a couple of scholars, Jewish religious scholars, who have proven that, in fact, the Old Testament is in perfect line, perfect harmony with science. I'm going to bring up Professor Gerald Schroeder. He teaches at Bar Ilan University in Israel. He wrote a book called Genesis and the Big Bang. There's another scholar, and I forgot his name, but let's stick with Gerald Schroeder. He proves let's start with the thesis. He says that the book of Genesis perfectly describes the creation of the universe. But he says there's been a big mistake made that the Hebrew word yom, it means day today, but he says previously in biblical times it meant an age, an era. And he said somehow, and this happened to me with these messianic people, it got changed into 1,000 years. And he says that's wrong. It was 1 billion years. And that if you take the creation story, that first there was darkness, then there was light, and then the darkness returns, and then the sun arrives, he says that is precisely what happened with the Big Bang, and then no planets, you had darkness again, and then the planets form, you have light again. He said every word of the Genesis story of the creation of the universe is accurate. But you can't do the 1,000 years business when the definition of yom, an era, could just as well be 1 million years or 1 billion years. And what Gerald Schroeder claims in his marvelous book, I highly recommend you go on Amazon and look for Genesis and the Big Bang, is that everything works in biblical texts with modern science. If you don't have it in your head that the earth is 5,700 years old, that in fact it is 5 billion years old. Now, they listen to me, these people. Now, it doesn't mean they're going to tomorrow read Gerald Schroeder, but at least they know there are Jewish scholars that are looking at... He's a scientist, by the way, as well as a rabbinical scholar. And he explains things from a scientific point of view, and he's not the only one in Israel who are understanding the Bible is exactly right. The physics of Genesis is exactly right if you use an era being 1 billion years.
Well, I'm going to know, but nobody was really around at the time of the Big Bang, so it's all conjecture, and it may be accurate or it may not be accurate. It's very interesting to know. It's a scientific theory, and of course, whether it's 1 billion years or whether it's 10,000 years or 20,000 years, we don't know. But go right ahead.
Well, let's just say this way. First there was darkness, then there was light. That's also conjecture, but it's also true in modern scientific circles. That's an exact description of the universe being created. The Bible gives the same creation theory, whether it's conjecture or not, as modern science.
Right. In fact, whether it's science, whether it's the Bible, they're all conjecture. We accept the Bible on faith, and, of course, the scientist challenges it because, of course, he disbelieves in God. So, in fact, the scientists, their theories all come from the fact that they totally reject the Bible, and I think it's interesting.
Oh, not these.
I know. These people are different.
Orthodox
these people Jews. Are trying, I'm sure, to, from a scientific point of view, trying to understand the Bible. I'm not sure we can, but you go right ahead, Barry.
Get the book. It's a fascinating, intellectual, a beautifully written book, by the way. Get the book. I'll leave it at that. But there's back to this discussion I had today. I just saw. I've had this theory for years, and you're going to get a new theory. You may not have heard it before. In Alaska, on the northern slope of Alaska, they are digging out large dinosaurs from 100 million years ago. The place is filled with dinosaur bones. And back then, it's not as if Alaska was a tropical climate. Alaska was much closer to the North Pole 100 million years ago. And yes, they had a very cold winter. And yet there was a very large dinosaur population.
Well, of course, is it possible that there was this polar shift that is the reason we have our mammoths, you know, with the suddenly almost instantaneously frozen solid, and that we're seeing the evidence of the dinosaurs? Did the areas of the world change when the Earth shifted? Go ahead.
Well, in the case of Alaska, it changed for the worse. It was only 350 miles from the North Pole. Its winter went 4 months without light, and yet you had these huge beasts roaming Alaska. Now, how could they survive? I saw this program recently where they said they had to have lived there, because if they had migrated, the migration would have been at least 1,000 miles south. If they were going to survive by migration, which is too much for a big lumbering beast. I have a theory, and I've held this theory for years, and I discussed it today with my messianic friends after discussing Genesis and the Big Bang. I said, I've always thought this. The dinosaurs had fur. Since you cannot live in an Arctic region today or any day, being a bare-skinned reptile or dinosaur, you had to have been covered in fur. Now, in all the pictures you'll ever see of dinosaurs, you'll never see one covered in fur. But I said you can't, they could not have survived on Alaska's north, far north of Alaska, as far as you could go to Point Barrow without having protection for their skin. That's just a new theory. I thought I'd throw it out of your show.
Well, you can, and you have every right to put it out, Barry, but the thing is, have you ever seen a reptile with fur? And you haven't. And so maybe, of course, the climate was entirely different in that area at another time in history, and some cataclysmic event occurred. And we can hypothesize what it might be, but it's the only way to explain dinosaur bones in northern Alaska. And so
they were reptiles. They were warm-blooded.
They were warm-blooded, but it's also the way that you'd explain the existence of the warm-blooded mammoths, certainly in Siberia. So obviously the climate in that part of the world at one time in the history of the Earth was entirely different than it is today. And I will tell you, of course, there's a tremendous amount of oil up there. And that oil, of course, had to come from some hydrocarbons. Now, maybe it came from methane and contaminated with bacteria, as Thomas Gould suggests in his book, The Deep Hot Biosphere. He was an astrophysicist, I believe, from Princeton, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, he was an astrophysicist, very well known, who wrote about the origin of oil. But, of course, most people believe oil comes from suddenly, from animal decomposition or certainly vegetable decomposition. Where would you get that amount of animals or vegetables up there to create these mammoth oil fields that lie even at Prudhoe Bay, even if you don't believe in Gull Island, the other ones? And, of course, you don't. There has to be another explanation. You know, it's very difficult for most people to admit, but, you know, there are a lot of things we just don't understand, Barry. Maybe someday we will.
Well, I enjoy these discussions. Now, just to state my impressions of my speeches, 2 points before I return to my personal impressions. 2 points got a lot of reaction in the speeches. And by the way, everyone was very, very intent. They were intently listening to me. And I gave my all for all four speeches so far. 1 point nobody knew about, and it shocked me. Everyone should have known about it. I said the Israeli citizens were ordered to hand back their gas masks, and there appears to be no intention whatsoever to to return them. Now, this to me is probably the worst scandal of all because the Syrians have chemical missiles. That the Jews could die of gas poisoning all over again. That they're being set up by their own government to walk into a nation that will become a gas chamber. And yet, they took the mask away after the previous Lebanon war, and now it looks like they'll never be returned again. The audience, no one knew this.
No, obviously they don't listen to our programs or just listen to you and I on the radio because we've covered this so many times, and of course it doesn't make any sense. Why would the Israeli government take the gas masks away from the Israeli people and promise to replace them and then absolutely refuse to replace them unless there are people at the highest levels of the Israeli government that want the Jews to die? Because, of course, they need to have some protection against the possibility of chemical and biological warfare, because I feel it's a very real threat. So, go right ahead.
You'll be flattered to know that they do listen to you.
Oh, do they really? Good.
Yes. I've heard this for days. They do know you, and they do listen to you, and I guess that point just never sunk in, that one of the great atrocities of the Israeli government is to set them up for death by gas. It's not ironic. Ironic is not the right word for the potential of another massive death of Jews by gas, because their own leaders didn't provide them with very easy protection. It's not that hard to make a gas mask and distribute them. I was there during the first Gulf War. They did, within 2 months, the whole country, everybody had gas masks. This time, they're not doing it, and you have to be suspicious and ask why not. And they just didn't believe me. I said, I'm telling you, it's true, they're not giving back gas masks.
And of course, you can find that up in Google. You can Google in, Israeli gas mask, confiscation of Israeli gas mask, something of that sort. Google, it's a wonderful source of information. You get the information you're not going to get through the regular channels. And Barry raises a very real question. Why would the Israeli leaders want to leave the Israeli citizens completely exposed to the possibility of chemical or biological death? And, of course, for the same reason, I believe, of course, that we have no civilian defense system here in America. In fact, whatever civilian defense system we had has been totally disbanded.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verki water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verki water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Explained a lot of things, and there is an answer, but perhaps we'll learn when we get to heaven the answer to many of these questions. The important thing to realize is we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, and we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping as we reach out 5 hours every day on stations across America, indeed across the world through the miracles of Internet and shortwave. Help us get the information out if you're in a position to. I know some of you are not, but if you are, we'd love to have you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Don't forget, of course, the program we're having this weekend. I think we're pretty well filled up. Well, we may be able to take one or two more people there, but I think we've got pretty close to 165, which is a great certainly audience that we're going to have for our Saturday program, I should say, for our Sunday program, this Sunday, the 26th of October, at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We hope that you'll get my book on the Brotherhood of Darkness and read it through and understand the spirits of forces behind what's going on. We hope, of course, you'll get the talk on the Forbidden Secret or the Secret Knowledge. They're two separate talks we've given on this subject, and, of course, the syllabus that goes with that on the Forbidden Secret. We hope, of course, you'll get the talk on the planned police state, the DVDs on the secret mysteries of America's beginning by our good friend Chris Pinto, the secret mysteries of America's beginning, and Riddles in Stone. Chris's third DVD in the trilogy will be available in December. It's called the Eye of the Phoenix. The Eye of the Phoenix. You can actually look at the trailer on that. It's up at Chris, just Google in Chris Pinto, YouTube, The Eye of the Phoenix, or Chris Pinto, The Eye of the Phoenix. You really want to watch it. I'll tell you what, I watched the trailer on this. It's about a 2-minute trailer. I can hardly wait for the DVD to come out because it gets into the symbology on the dollar bill. And you will see the owl on the back of the dollar bill. In fact, maybe we'll bring some of those blow-ups so that you can actually see the owl. Why would they put an owl on the back of the dollar bill? Why would they put all those sixes, six, 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 on the back of the dollar bill? You think that's just by accident? No, ladies and gentlemen, the people involved know exactly what they're doing. And they laugh at us for being so foolish. We actually have, a book on symbology on the dollar bill. I believe we have a 4-tape set on the same thing. You need to get it. But I can hardly wait to see, of course, the new DVD is coming out, The Eye of the Phoenix. That's the third in the trilogy put out by Chris Pinto, but The Secret Mysteries is available. These are very professionally done, I should say, and certainly the DVD on the Riddles in Stone, the secret architecture of our nation's capital. You go to Washington, D.C. today, you'll see all sorts of astrological signs and horoscopes, and you'll see them painted on the roofs of the buildings. Why do they have all these astrological symbols there? Why? Because of the occult influence in Washington, D.C. you must understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle, and most Christians have no idea that although America was formed by Christians as a Christian nation, there have always been the occult forces there. Of course, they are in total and complete control today, and using the power